Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Pipeline Pioneers, a sales intel show where our focus is to help the community learn from each other, from practitioners, from leaders, and from the experts as to how to generate the most optimal pipeline for their business. As we know, pipeline is the heart and blood of any company. And at Sales Intel, we believe that generating pipeline is not just the responsibility of BDR team or the management team or the marketing team. It's a team sport. Generating pipeline is a team sport. It truly takes a village to build a strong pipeline that ultimately converts into pipeline to revenue. Today, I'm excited to have Josh with me. Josh, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Josh, to kick things off, why don't you tell the audience about you and how in your role do you impact the pipeline generation process for your business?
Yeah. Well, again, my name's Josh Feedy. I'm the CEO and founder of a company called SalesReach. So how I put my stamp on revenue is I'm a founder that wears all the hats. So I actually am on the front line making the sales efforts. I'm taking demo calls. I am doing onboardings and trainings with customers. All of those things contribute to the revenue. My primary mechanism for building revenue is providing education, is producing content and providing education on channels like LinkedIn, putting out podcasts of my own, being on podcasts like this. People want to identify solutions on their own. They want to learn things on their own before they reach out to companies these days. And I've just found that it's been a really great way to build the business. So that's what we do. Our product is what the industry calls a digital sales room. So if anyone's interested in looking it up, just go to salesreach.io. And it's a digital sales room is just a place to organize all the important information during your conversations with your prospects and customers.
This is awesome. You know, we have all learned that the buyers in today's age, they complete their buying journey or 60, 70% of that on their own before even they get in touch with the company.
Right? The stat actually changed recently. It's even more scary, believe it or not. Now it's 80%. They are completing 80% of their journey independent of sales. And then it goes further. The stat actually says that when you factor in all of the other vendors that they're also going to be talking to, because they never reach out to one of us and say, oh, I'm so glad I found you. I don't need to look anywhere else. This is the only place I'm going to go. No, they're going to go to 3 to 4 other places for sure. Right. So then the stat says you only have 3% of the time that you used to have with somebody before they make a purchasing decision. That is a very, very, very scary statistic when you think about it. And it really comes down to a really important question that we need to solve for and everyone needs to be thinking about. Why do buyers not want to talk to us until they feel like they're 80% of the way through their buying journey? What have we done to cause them to not want to talk to us? And the one thing that I'll say is we do need to fix this. We need to change the perception of sales in buyers' minds in the B2B space, because if you look at sources like Gartner, there will be study after study after study on what they call buyer enablement. And when you look into these studies on buyer enablement, what you're going to find is they're going to talk about this 80% stat a lot. They're going to talk about how buyers are buying today, how they're organized, how they're gathering their own information, right? They're going out to websites, they're downloading things, they're saving things. And here's what's happening. They're getting confused. They're getting paralyzed by the analysis. They can't make sense between vendor A, vendor B, vendor C, because nobody's been guiding them. Nobody's been helping them. They're trying to stay away from sales and they're trying to get it all on their own. And there is so much information out there that they can get it. But the problem is the average decision-making team is 14 people.
14 people, yep.
If I go to 4 competing companies' websites and download all the information that I personally think is valuable and then try to disseminate that to my team of 14 people that need to review this, that's going to be chaos. There is no way that's not chaos. And so that's why we built our product, because listen, we know there's going to be a lot of information that needs to be reviewed. If we leave them to their own devices, it's going to be chaos. If we can intercede, if we can jump in and help them organize all the madness, all the things they're reviewing into a central repository, it's visual, there's guided instructions, there's videos, and they can literally share a singular link with the entire decision-making team, which, by the way, isn't sitting in a room together most of the time anymore. They're all over the country, right? Now everyone's reviewing things the way you want them to review it. That's how you can move the needle these days, right? Is just clearing up all the buyer confusion caused by buyers trying to evade sales.
Yeah, it is fascinating. I am sold. I'm sold. now more so than ever before, when not only, you know, our teams are dispersed, right? You very seldom see them, you know, in the same room. So Josh, last year was hard for a lot of SaaS companies, especially in the B2B space, where, you know, there was not enough pipeline. The pipeline that was there was just not healthy. And as a result, lots of companies missed their targets, right? Combine that with the macroeconomic headwinds that we all faced. It was just not a pretty picture. When you look back, what is one thing that comes to mind to say, you know what, I wish I had done things differently? And what's the learning that you derive from there?
It's really, really, really hard to narrow this down to one thing. And the reason for that is there are so many different things that you can point at that it's like, well, I wish I would have thought of that. But then when you think about it, you go, well, how would I have known? It goes back to what you said in the beginning, though. Nothing's more important than pipeline. But what was amazing to me is how much more important a robust pipeline became, because deals slowed down across the board for everybody. My average sales cycle 2 years ago was 30 days or less. Easy. Yep. I'd have a conversation with someone. They'd go talk to their team. They'd schedule a follow-up, a quick follow-up, maybe a 15, 30-minute follow-up so the rest of the team could verify that it's real. I'd give them a contract. They'd move forward. Now, it's not uncommon for a deal to take me an entire 12 months to get across the finish line. That's severe, yep. Right? And it depends on the size of the deal. But that's one thing. The other thing that I really wish that I would have paid more attention to is, or the one thing that I wish I would have known was, you know, how to stay better engaged with the people after they left the organization that they were at when they were using my product. There were so many layoffs, That's part of what impacted SaaS businesses so much, is so many of us are on a seat basis, right? Well, you have 20 users, so you're going to be charged X. You have 50 users, so you're going to be charged X, because it's based on how many people are there. Well, when a company goes from 75 users on your platform to 35 users in a year because of layoffs, it's not that they're not happy with you. It's just, we laid off half of our staff. We no longer need half those seats. Okay, well, what I wish I would have done a better job of then, and I'm starting to try to do a better job of it now, is staying in front of the people that left those jobs because they went somewhere else.
Yep.
And, you know, a lot of them have been proactive when they get settled in their new role and reach out and say, hey, I had this at my last job and I'd love to have it here. Can we have that discussion? A lot of them have been proactive about that, but that's not their job. That's my responsibility. I need to take that on more. There's been a lot of transitions in organizations. And I think that that's the number one learning I have, is just never give up on those people.
Got it. Always stay with them. Your evangelist. These are the people who have used your product. They've been happy. Let's just catch them to their next job. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you. So, well, New Year's here. The new budgets, new initiatives, right? New experiments for all of us to try. What is one new experiment that you're going to try this year that you think is going to have a positive impact on your pipeline?
So, anyone that knows me knows that I am so focused, I'm hyper-focused on providing the most personalized experience every time I work with somebody. The product that I built was built out of my own sales process, okay? It forces you to be very, very, very human in your approach. When we launched our tool, no AI was involved in it. There weren't any fancy marketing tokens or anything like that. I wanted people to be human. I wanted people to actually take the time to make sure that when someone receives a video from them or information from them, that they actually took the time to build that. Because I felt like, and I still believe, that, you know, if people know that you took the time, it makes them feel special. And humanizing the sales process is a really good thing. But one of the things that I have learned is that sometimes we do need to just go fast. And that has never been more true than it is right now, where businesses are struggling to build pipeline. They are struggling to close deals fast enough. They're struggling to get people to respond to them. Let's be honest. I mean, it's a challenge these days to get people to even just respond to you. So people do need to be able to go fast. One of the concessions that I had to make in myself, and we're now making in our product, and this hasn't fully rolled out yet, but it will by the time this has aired, I'm assuming. but we are going to allow people to more rapidly create bulk pages that they can use personalization tokens on to send out to a larger group of individuals. And what's exciting for us is that it's not just going to be the content on the page. It'll actually be the video that gets to be tokenized as well. So you will be able to provide a very personalized or personal feeling, first outreach, maybe second and third outreach, without too much effort. Literally 2 seconds, you can send out thousands of pages. But that's going to be an experiment for me. And here's the part that I'm terrified about this one is I don't want to see people falling back on the heyday of the spray and pray. I don't want to see too much more spamming in the world. There's too much of that. And so my education and coaching with customers that have been beta testing this new feature has been, now that you have this power, you also have a great responsibility. Do not create one page and send it to 50 million people today. Don't do that. Yep. Those 50 million people are not going to like that approach. What you're going to do is you're going to take your list of 100 people or 200 people or 500 people, and you're going to go through it and you're going to figure out what are the things that are common about different groups of these organizations, people. How can I make this page, even though it's generic, this approach, even though it's generic, as human and personal as possible to a group of people out of here, right? I truly believe that that's where people are going to find the success. But that is what we need to find, is a way where we can rapid prospect. Tools like yours help people with this every single day, right? That's why I said when we were chatting before we started recording that tools like yours and mine work hand in glove all day long. You have a sales enablement tool. I have a buyer enablement tool. When somebody is trying to make the experience better for a buyer, one of the things that helps make the experience better for the buyer is having better intelligence on what that buyer is actually looking for, right? When you're using a tool like yours, taking that information that you gather, if you can find 15 companies that are all searching the same type of information, they're all in the same industry, they're all in the same decision type, maybe it's the CMO, maybe it's the CRO, maybe it's the CFO, great. We got those 15 companies. We got the intel on those companies. Now we can create and craft an outreach strategy that's going to be very, very personal, even though it's a little bit generic. Obviously, it's going to be a canned message, but a canned message to a tailored audience of this, right? That's where those two tools come together. And I think that that's an important thing for people to be thinking about right now, especially more than ever, is the difference between a sales enablement and a buyer enablement platform. We need them both. Don't get me wrong. We absolutely need them both. But don't let the ability to find information, right, and get the data that you need, don't let it stop there. Use that information for good. Make sure that your job, if you're making your job easier, right, tools like yours help make sales reps' life easier. Think about your buyer, though. Buyers don't buy for a living. Nobody you have ever sold to in the B2B space buys for a living. So they're going to get confused. So think about them. Be empathetic. We say empathy is the number one skill of a salesperson. And I'm calling BS on that all day long.
Yep.
Because I talk to salespeople all the time that I'm like, do you really understand the frustrations that your process is putting your buyer through? And it's the first time they've ever even thought about it. I'll ask them, how does your sales process go? How are you sending things to people? Oh, I send documents. I send links. I send videos. I send all. You've sent 25 emails over 6 months to your prospect. You've sent 30 attachments and links and videos across all of those emails. You're expecting that they organize that. You're expecting they understand this. You're expecting that they feel empowered enough to advocate for you to another 13 people on their team. Are you kidding me? Have some empathy here, right? So we need to use both of these tools to A, equip us with what we need for us to move fast in our job, but don't forget about the buying component. We need to make sure that when we have the power to get that information, that we're also utilizing it to make our buyers' lives and decision-making process seamless as well.
Makes sense. So more personalization and more empathy towards the buyer. Mm-hmm. This is awesome. So it's a good transition to the next section. Josh, I'm going to share my screen here with you. As we know, growth comes in, you know, through many channels. Growth comes through many channels. Pipeline gets generated from multiple channels. And the art of optimizing those channels is to figure out where do we place our bets, right? We have limited budget, limited resources. So you have 100 pennies here, with these 10 coins, and you have multiple channels, right? And your job is to allocate these 100 pennies across these channels in a way that will generate the most optimal pipeline for your business. So how would you distribute these 100 pennies across the channels?
Okay. All right. Well, I'm bad at math here, so don't make me do equal numbers here. But
you
here's what
I will move things. As you tell me, I'll move these pennies.
Here's what I would say. Investing in community is an incredible place to be focusing your efforts. And I would put at least two, maybe three pennies in community. Okay.
Let's put three pennies in the community.
Yeah. Community is huge. I would put two pennies into partnership. Partnership has been great for my business. I know it's been great for a lot of other businesses as well. And for me, partnerships are incredible because it's active users. In my case, at least, it's active users that have businesses with customers they can bring my product to, right? Sure. It's a win-win for everybody. And it's an easy sale, and it's a great way to have additional sales force. After that, I'd put some into customer, one penny into customer.
Uh-huh.
I would put two into founder-led.
Yeah. Well, you are living it, right?
Yep. And I'd put one in product, one in sales.
One in product, one in sales. I love it. Yeah. I love the clarity that you bring to the process here. This is awesome. This is awesome. Let's double click. You know, not a lot of founders get out there to sell, right? Me being first, right? Being one of them, you know, I was very shy in my earlier days. You know, I'm an engineer, so very, very shy. So talk to the community about, like, you know, the importance of founder getting out there.
I mean, here's the thing. And you're right. Not a lot of founders do like to get out there and be in front of people. But here's what I've learned is, number one, we all agree people buy from people. They do not buy from brands. Okay.
Yep.
And so if you go to your LinkedIn company page, I promise you that it's going to have far less traction than any one employee at your organization. Your employees have 10 times the reach that your company profile page has on LinkedIn. And what employee at your business has the best opportunity to actually get followed and get some praise for their posts and get some likes and get some exposure? The CEO, the founder, the president. Why? Because we all want to say, I know a guy, I know a girl, right? I know the person at the helm of that awesome thing, right? There's excitement in that. I talk to people a lot about the importance of being an accessible CEO. I think that people should feel and should know that you are someone that they can approach with questions. You're their person. You're their resource. Just because you're the CEO doesn't mean you always have to answer with, I'll connect you with sales. I'll connect you with sales. I'll connect you with sales. Heck no. Sometimes you can say, yeah, I'll take that one. Let me take that one, right? It builds so much fanfare. And so when I put the two pennies in founder-led growth, the main reason that I put the additional monies into that column is because it's going to be utilized to produce as much educational content as possible to help evangelize what we're building at the business. But additionally, the most important part here is, and we'll talk about this later with the next piece that we're going to get to, but the most important thing here is you want your team to be creating content on LinkedIn. You do. Today, you do. And you probably want them creating content on YouTube, some YouTube shorts, right? Maybe some Instagram, depending on your brand, but for sure, YouTube shorts and LinkedIn in a B2B space. You want your team producing that. Well, you as the founder, if you're creating that content, you're setting the bar, you're letting them know this is okay. This is part of our brand. This is part of the lifeblood of this business, is creating this. And I am empowering you to do exactly what I'm doing. And I'm showing you that I'm willing to do it myself. I know it's uncomfortable to put yourself out there, but look at me, I'm doing it too.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense. Thank you so much for double clicking on that. So Josh, let's take a look at some benchmarks here. So this is a chart that shows you how community as a whole have placed their bets. Like I took the averages of community leaders, and I'm going to now overlay your data, your responses on top of it. So orange is you, Josh, and the blue is community. When you take a look at this comparison, is there something that jumps out or is there something that surprises you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what's really interesting to me right now is to see how high the sales-led column is here. It surprises me because we have been seeing a lot of information being published recently about how sales teams are being reduced and how organizations are finding ways outside of just focusing on a sales, on actual sales to bring in revenue, right? And we're seeing with the rise of AI that there's a lot of things that maybe we typically used to have BDRs do that we just don't need them to have to do anymore, right? I mean, we're seeing kind of the extinction of BDRs right now. Sales will always be the lifeblood of an organization. And so that's probably why that is so high. But what I would say is that for me, community and partnership is sales, right? That is my sales force right there. And so I would much rather cast a wider net personally and have my community rallying around what I'm doing, have my partners rallying around what I'm doing, having my customers rally around what I'm doing, being evangelists, spreading the word. That way my sales force is exponentially larger. That's why I'd personally rather put my money there, but I understand why the graph looks the way it does for sure.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Josh, for joining us. Thank you for your insights. I am sure our community is going to get a lot of nuggets from here. I personally enjoyed it. So thank you so much for joining on the show, Josh.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.